Are dents and scratches putting a dent in your day? Introducing Roger Steen Crash Repairs Adelaide, your trusted solution for automotive woes. With over two decades of expertise, Roger Steen Crash Repairs guarantees top-notch service, restoring your vehicle to its former glory in no time. From minor dings to major collisions, our skilled technicians handle it all with precision and care, using state-of-the-art equipment and techniques.
Roger Steen Crash Repairs saved my car. It looks brand new.
Fast, friendly and reliable. I wouldn't trust anyone else with my vehicle. Don't let accidents slow you down. Visit Roger Steen Crash Repairs Adelaide at 14 Penner Avenue, Glynde, for quality service you can count on. And here's a special offer just for our listeners. Mention this podcast and receive a $100 discount on your repair. Roger Steen Crash Repairs Adelaide. Excellence in every repair.
Previously on the Game On Podcast.
And so, and then eventually coming back to Port. Darryl, how did that all eventuate there?
So, 98, finished off that year. I fractured my skull and I was actually reported in the same game late in the season. So, I missed the first final. We had a double chance, but we got knocked out by Melbourne in the final at the G. So, we're going to the 99 seat. Well, end of 98, obviously, they make the decision to get rid of Stan. So we go into 99, Tim Watson gets appointed. And, I really enjoyed Tim. Alistair Clarkson arrived. Kevin Morris was an assistant. Andy Collins was an assistant. So it was a real change through that period. We bought some players into the club who were sort of second chance. Certainly talented players like Tony Francis, Monkhurst, Sean Charles. A number of these players who were sort of recycled players, Tony Delaney. Recycled players, but we moved out some quality young kids through that period. Joel Smith, Matty Lappin, Tony Brown delisted.
Yeah, that was a weird one.
And sort of looking back on it, we just didn't have that. I suppose Tim just lacked that overall program to be able to nurture them young kids. Them kids were still 21 years of age. Look at it, it's or 22 years of age.
Tony still, Francis
still learning their craft.
Tony Francis speaks glowingly of Tim Watson.
Yeah, no, they had some sort of relationship, and I know that Tim went strongly after him, and he played some good footy for us.
Yeah.
He was a real introvert, real shy guy.
Yeah, he is, isn't he?
But it certainly changed the whole makeup of that group. We'd been extremely close since 95 right through to 98, and it totally changed that group over that 12-month to 18-month period.
Sportscast SA presents Game On. Game On. South Australia's destination for everything sports. Local, national and international sports. AFL football, soccer, basketball, golf, baseball, tennis, cricket, and any other sports played in this wide world. And we're going to have a blast doing it. So sit back, relax, and let's do this thing. Welcome to Game On.
Welcome to Game On. My name's Pete, and Malcolm joining me in the studio once again. And Darryl Wakeland, fantastic there, talking about his days at St Kilda. And just looking up that team sort of around about that 96-97 area. I mean, Nicky Winmar, Nathan Burke, Robert Harvey, Ozzie Jones, Stewie Lowe, obviously Darryl himself. Some unbelievable players that went through the St Kilda Football Club at that stage.
Yeah, they certainly had some talent there. Very close with the 0-1. They were a couple of goals up at halftime in 97 as well. So that then the draw in 10 where the ball doesn't bounce the right way. So fine line between pleasure and pain.
Absolutely. And obviously the 96 ANZAC Cup
yep.
Winning team as well. So and then makes his way back to Port Adelaide. So, no, we thank Darryl for his time on that. So let's get into Around the Grounds, mate.
Around the Grounds.
All right, we've got to talk, obviously, the SANFL with special guest Jackson Callow is going to drop by and give us some thoughts on the state game and obviously Norwood's round one victory. The SANFLW, the soccer special guest today is Robbie Neal from the St Kilda, Sydney and Norwood football clubs and the SANFL currently. But we're going to kick off with some of the hot topics that are going around the AFL at the moment, mate. And the first one off the rank is, should the gather round remain in SA for longer than the current agreement?
Yes, yes, and yes.
Fantastic.
For mine, it's the perfect location because it's easy to get to Adelaide. You have it anywhere else, and it's far harder travelling-wise. And just to be out and about a lot this last week, mm-hmm. and you know, that was the comment got back from so many people. It was a group of guys over from WA. I introduced them to Michael Aish on Sunday. They were like kids at a candy shop, talking to them, talking to the Victorians who'd come over. New South Wales, you hold it anywhere else. If you go to WA, that's just too far. Mm-hmm. It virtually means it becomes a WA-only event.
Yep.
Sydney, again, it's that further. Again, there's not quite as much footy town and all that. Mm-hmm. How many people are going to want to go and watch
yep.
Western Bulldogs play Geelong in Sydney?
Yep.
So I honestly think Adelaide is the only place.
Is it a case of football heartland here in South Australia and that we've embraced it? But because of the locality that, you know, it's an eight-hour drive from Victoria, it's a 30-40-minute flight from Melbourne, Victoria, an hour and a half from Sydney and basically the same from Perth, it does make sense it is a central location, isn't it?
Now, there were a few Nord supporters shitty about Steele's comment. I had no problem with that whatsoever. And he was trying really to say, well, maybe it wasn't a great choice of word, but he's just grabbed straight after the game. Mm-hmm. What he's really trying to say is, it's a festival sort of atmosphere because there's so many people there at the game.
But they're neutrals too. And they're
neutral yep. people. So they're just watching. They're not fanatical about it. So I totally understood what he meant.
Yep.
I had no problem with that whatsoever.
Yep. My question to you is, can we make the gather round any better? Can we make it better? I mean, obviously we're off to the Barossa, which has all been locked yep. in for next year. Obviously, that's going to showcase the Barossa, but is there anything else that we can enhance the event with?
Not so much enhancing, but I admit I don't see the need for a doubleheader. That's one thing which got me confused. Okay, why not have had on Saturday, had Fremantle play Carlton, you then empty Adelaide Oval
yes.
while the Sydney yes. West Coast game was on, followed by Geelong Western Bulldogs, the night game. I don't see the need to have a double header. I reckon that can go.
Yep. I'm with you on that one there. Yeah, I'm not sure if it's the logistics of it or how it works, but you would think that if for the telecast, because really at the end of the day this is a broadcast round.
Yes.
That you've got a game that's in between, which gives you what, 2.5, almost 3 hours. Easier. It would be much easier to empty the stadium and then bring in your next lot of supporters. I'm with you on that one.
Yeah, and my other bit out of that is it didn't come out to reasonably late that you could register that you were leaving, so that ticket was then on sold. I still think it's too messy for the second game. And the second game, it was better than last year, but I still think it's too messy. And I just think, let's make it simple.
Yep.
In, out, next game.
Yep.
So that's probably totally my good. Main yep. one.
What did you think of the state game being played at Glenelg? We spoke with Jackson about that, which we recorded a touch earlier. He was quite glowing that, you know, big crowd down there and quite enjoyed it.
Yeah, look, I've got to be honest. I was surprised they got over 4,000. I thought that was a fantastic crowd. So, look, full marks. And, yeah, South Australia won, so you enjoyed a bit more. But I just think overall, yeah, big tick.
Really? Is it a case that we get a couple of other states involved to really bring that state of origin to the state for one weekend, or is it going to work with SA and Victoria?
I think it's more SA and Victoria. Yeah. I do. I that whether you therefore play a women's game as well, or that becomes would does that become the under 18 national championship? Well, South Australia, Victoria, but although is it too early in the year? Recruiters certainly probably want it later.
Yes.
So I think there's still some tinkering which could be done there.
It's a festival of football, so I'm just trying to come up with ways that maybe we can enhance it a little bit. But anyway, now
Maybe not overzealous people working at Elder Park might help too. Yeah.
Agreed. Yes. Three gather rounds. Are you kidding me? They're talking about cooking the golden goose.
Yeah.
It's great in theory, and I understand it, and the practicalities around it just aren't going to work.
We had learned from Big Bash. Big Bash, they killed the golden goose by going and just increasing, so it became a ridiculous number of games. It was no longer the hottest ticket in town. Yep. Everyone lost interest. Good luck getting that back when that interest set. Leave it. I get why they did round one, but I think there's as many negatives as positives with that. So just leave gather round.
The draw is inequitable as it is. Obviously, they're talking about it when Tasmania come into the 19th team, and we'll get to that a little bit later. But trying to have three gather rounds, you're right. It's a bit like the Big Bash, and if you want to learn off of anything, that is the classic example right there. Totally get it.
Yeah.
Chris Scott and Lee Matthews' comments about the SA team should play each other in a showdown that seemed a little bit farcical, to be totally honest with you.
Ridiculous, and well done by Peter Malinauskas to put Lee Matthews back in his spot. Just ridiculous.
But it doesn't make commercial sense either. That's the other thing.
No, it's just ridiculous, really. There's no need for it. Sorry, if we're going to say that, it's to make it more equitable. Well, hang on. Let's have Collingwood and Richmond actually travel more, etc. It's an inequitable competition because there's too many teams in Victoria, yet you're then complaining about the South Australian getting it. The only teams who can complain
is the Western Australian
Queensland sides and Sydney sides. They're the only ones, not the Victorian sides. That was just absolutely unbelievable.
And the interstate teams from Western Australia and up in Sydney and Queensland, they embraced it. Well, Lockie Ash,
Said, yeah, this is great. Yeah, etc.
They've embraced the festival.
As KG would say, strike me pink.
I like that one. All right, the big topic that's come out of today is Jeremy Finlayson gets three games for his homophobic slur. Your thoughts on that one, mate? I know you were sort of when you walked in.
Yeah, what's got me is just how the inequitable of it, again, that you had Alexander Clarkson be given a fine. Finlayson gets three. Taylor Walker, the way he was treated, I still have blood boiling for that. That he copped six, and if the full story had ever come out there, I actually think he would have been let off.
Mm-hmm.
And out of that, so I just for mine, it's they've got to get there. There's nothing in. Aren't we meant to have precedent go from there? Well, the AFL then don't. It's bizarre.
I'm left scratching my head. Look, we've all been in the case of being on a footy field where the white line fever gets you and you might say or do something that you you regret afterwards. I totally understand that and I don't condone it one little bit. But you're right, the up and down nature of how they're adjudicating this, it just leaves you scratching your head.
Society's changed. I'm showing my age.
I agree.
I played footy for Adelaide Uni. If we didn't get called that every week, it was almost like, what in the hell have we done wrong? So, yeah, it's got me a bit beat, I think. Yep. Yeah.
Anyway, he's got 3 weeks now. Yeah. Does that help Port Adelaide with Georgiadis as long as he stays healthy? Does that help their selection a little bit? I know
Then you've got Lord is out still. What for me is, so Finlayson's copped this. Let's also, I really feel sorry for him for what he's going through off the ground as well.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if Lord comes back in and plays well and Georgiadis plays well, Dixon stays fit, he doesn't get back in the side. So guess what? It's a hell of a lot bigger penalty than three games.
Yep.
So, yeah.
It's going to be an interesting watch, that one. Anyway, a question without notice there. Dusty to potentially walk away from the game, not making the move to Gold Coast. Interesting or
I don't think he'll ever go to Gold Coast. I still think he'll only play at Richmond. Now they've come out and said, no, that's crap. His manager, let's just wait and see.
Yep.
I think we're jumping at shadows at that. Let him get through, play his 300 and go from there.
All right, let's move on. Dimmer cut hard to send a message to the team, but also to find out who he's going to have in his, hopefully, premiership team at some stage down the track.
Yeah, look, I had them in my eight at the start of the year. Maybe that might end up being a bit premature, that he's going to go, right, who am I thinking? And now there, Walter played his second game, and he's the one I raved on to you beforehand. Yes. We also had the other couple, Reed, and the other academy kids escaped from mine. Graham debuted. They can all play.
Mm-hmm.
Ability's not going to be the problem at Gold Coast whatsoever. A little bit unlucky too, where when they were in front, there was a sling tackle. Toby Green.
Yep.
They had the ball, were running clear. Retaliator, as always, gets caught.
Yes.
I thought he was a little bit unlucky with that too, because he really wasn't that much in it. That he could have... Yeah, I thought that was probably a bit over-umpired as an umpire. So a little bit unlucky there. Let's face it, they probably handed it as much to GWS so far as anyone. So,
and that was a high-quality game,
yeah,
too.
It was.
We'll talk about that one in a minute. The Cats off to a surprise start, or should we be surprised?
Yeah, maybe not. They finally had the chance to actually have a bit of a rest where they've been the team to keep going and play through the finals, start again. Finals, bang. So probably some of those players needed the time off. And I think the encouraging thing, the sign there, was that Dangerfield was out injured. Selwood, as we know, that they might finally be getting Clark and Partfoot and Atkins into their midfield and Bruin, who they've recruited.
The blessing in disguise.
Yeah, that they all look like, geez, there's some talent there, so, yeah.
And they've used their draft picks very well, and they've got a couple of good young ones, and we'll obviously talk about that one. Now, Carlton, are they the Collingwood of 22-23, winning so many close games? Not that long ago they lost those close games. Is that their edge?
Oh, maybe, but geez. It was funny because we ended up with Michael Ash on the Sunday at Nord, and James Ash, actually, there was a mark on his shoulder from the footy.
Mm-hmm.
So pretty unlucky. That then's a ball up. Should have been a ball up with 1 minute to get 1 minute 18 seconds to go with them in front. So who knows?
Yep.
Yeah. Look, again, I think the umpiring there. Well, look, apparently he did go off his tree, and that's more my mail. I think the bit of himself's a bit fanciful. But I still would have gone as the umpire. Hey, F and pull your head in. I can do this too.
Yep.
Get on with it. Be proactive, not reactive. And I thought that was a bit precious, and it sort of has left a bit of a bad taste where, hang on, there's 40 seconds to go. Let's see if Freo can get it out of the middle, and this could be a game on to that was pretty anticlimactic. I thought it was over-umpired.
Fair call, and I was going to ask you about umpiring. Yeah. We'll do that one a little bit later. Yeah. And my last one on the hot topics so far is Harley Reid. Obviously, West Coast showed some very, very good form against Sydney. You know, but West Coast have got to move heaven and earth to keep him on the list during their rebuild because...
Yeah, there's no doubt about that. He looks, for all the publicity, that was probably the game so far where we went, wow, there is a fair bit here.
Absolutely. Well,
I think we all knew that, but that was the first one at AFL level.
I saw a stat of top five players for broken tackles and all sorts of things. He's a mile in front.
He's pretty strong.
I know he's getting plenty of midfield time, obviously, at West Coast with the situation they're in, but still to be able to back that up, and that goal that he kicked was very impressive and very almost the jumper, pulling the jumper out and saying, you know, I'm here for the long haul was very symbolic, that's for sure. All right, let's move on to the Adelaide teams, mate. Adelaide, better competitive in the first half, but not to the level of what Melbourne were.
I thought Melbourne just really
cruised along.
Yeah, I thought they were in cruise control.
So my question for you is, obviously the big thing going around at the moment is Nick's the right man for the job, or has he got the most out of this group?
That's the worrying part, yeah. So I think Goody was just reading a book personally he'd purchased. It was well done too as well. Yes, I just thought Melbourne just did enough. And I thought Port, as we've got on the running seat with Rosie's Butters, Horn, Francis.
Yeah, we'll get to that in a second. I just want to finish off with Adelaide there, that Nix has obviously got the most out of the group that he's had, which shows you that he can coach.
Yeah.
Throwing him under the bus at this stage, I don't think it's the right move personally, but anyway.
Yeah.
But should Adelaide now go out and go very hard for Petty, Haywood and Filippo? Because Filippo hasn't signed with St Kilda yet.
Yeah, look, my mail is he will.
Of course.
Look, yes, but I also think they need a big-bodied midfielder. They need a key defender. So this, and they obviously need a ruckman. So there's glaring weaknesses there, which you can argue is Petty and Haywood in that. Walker goes, he's, you know, closer to the end than the beginning, obviously.
Yes, yep.
That's what I meant there. Yep. So, yeah, Harry, Petty becomes crucial there possibly. But, yeah, look, I think there's that many holes in the Adelaide list at the moment. They're going to need more than that.
Swiss cheese, mate. Yeah. Talking about Adelaide's draft woes, Jordan Gallucci taken with pick 15 in 2016, Fogarty with pick 12 in 17, Chase Jones with 9 in 18, Ned McHenry, Fisher-McAsee, Riley Thilthorpe, Luke Pedler, Rochelle, Michael Annie, and Curtin. They're the draft picks that they've had. We obviously reserve on Curtin and probably Michael Annie a little bit.
Look, my comment there, though, is the recruiters are the ones who are given, oh, they haven't come through. Development, coaching. And I'm sorry, Gallucci-wise, if the recruiters get their way, that would have been Tim English.
Mm-hmm.
And the recruiters got overruled by Pike because he wanted a midfielder trying to keep his job. Right. So there's other things there as well. I think Adelaide, yes, of course, they're bitterly disappointing in the recruiting when you go in that angle. But it's not only that angle. I'll go back to my umpiring days. Aaron Fiora as a junior was freaking unbelievable. He still did things to this day I've never seen any other kid do. He got picked up at number 3, and I would have picked him at 1.
Yep.
And sort of bottomed out and had a, you know, he still played 100-odd games, but you never went, wow.
Yep.
Aaron Fiora. Like, whereas a junior, trust me, it was more wow. It was fucking wow.
Absolutely. Are Adelaide shooting themselves in the foot by not playing these youngsters a little bit earlier? They seem to have this need and want of them to play SANFL football for 100 games before they play in the AFL. Whereas we've seen, and we'll talk about Port Adelaide in a minute, is that they've thrown their young guys almost into the fray and they've repaid them in spades.
I'm dumbfounded how Dowling didn't play last Saturday. He just had to
You
play.
And me both.
Extraordinary non-selection. Unbelievable.
So is that a case of that Adelaide's pig-headedness, I suppose, is probably the right word for it.
Why you bring Berry back without picking Dowling? Just
because the only one that I can think of since 97, 98, where obviously Blighty played a lot of the young guys, like your Goodwins and your Johnsons and all of that, the only one that I can think of in recent times that they've played at a relatively young age is Michael Annie and Rochelle. That's it.
And as someone said, they got back in the game and went back. The next centre bounce was Laird, Dawson and Berry.
That was Kane Corns. Yep.
My God. Unbelievable.
Yep. All right. Adelaide, for me, no man's land. I did mention it last week. Yep. There's just way too many players of the same type.
Yep.
There's either too many young ones, too many old ones, and the young ones are not really being given a go at that AFL level. There just seems to be, like I said, a bit of a stubbornness to play these players or give them a go. Real worry for me anyway.
Frustration.
Pyman, is he a chance from GWS to the Crows as a free agent?
Oh, let's wait and see. Who knows? Would you want to
leave? Sorry, Perryman.
Perryman. Maybe. Let's see where he ends up. It's too early in the year yet.
I know.
Injuries, guys come in, situations change.
No, I know. All right, let's move on to Port Adelaide. Have we just witnessed the coming of age of the Port Adelaide midfield? We all thought was going to be special, but I reckon on the weekend with Rosie Butters and Horn Francis basically collecting 25 possessions or more each, it was the 1-2-3 knockout punch that Essendon didn't see coming.
Oh, look, there's just insane ability, pace. That trio can do things no other midfield in the competition can do. Dry track, they're a chance against anyone with those three.
Will we be seeing the next Brisbane-ish midfield with, you know, the Fab Four, Fab Three, Fab Four?
Yeah, quite possibly, really. Yeah,
that's what we're going to be comparing it to, really, at the end of the day.
I think so.
Boak, do we see Port Adelaide missing Boak or not? From a leadership point of view.
Yeah, leadership, yes.
Because probably, from a playing point of view.
No, you've probably moved. move part. He's no longer the key, the key wheel, but from a leadership,
What do Port Adelaide need to add to their list to make them a real premiership threat, apart from the, obviously the, this gun midfield that they've got? But what can they add? Where can they improve? Because there's a lot of people still not rating them as a premiership threat, and I know why, because they haven't defeated top eight sides on a regular basis.
I think it's more – I don't think it's that. I think it's more the question, hey, they do it in the minor round and bomb out September. I think the only way they can do it is actually perform in September. Everyone's going to have questions until they get to that point again.
No, fair call. And then our last one on Port Adelaide, is the succession plan in place already for Port? What if Hinkley wins the premiership? Is this Collingwood all over again?
Maybe. Yeah,
that's my worry, is that if they do actually win it, well, then their succession plan, does it take a step backwards, or do they go ahead with it like Collingwood did?
Yeah, not so sure that Hinkley's as pig-headed as Mick, so yeah.
Fair call. Last week's games, obviously Adelaide losing to Melbourne by 15 points, Brisbane getting back on the winner's circle there by 70 points, Port Adelaide, as we have already mentioned, that their midfield ran amok there by 69 points. West Coast were pretty competitive against Sydney there for a little while in that game. So Swans obviously by 26 points. One of the games was the Dockers and the Blues that went down to the wire, and obviously umpiring controversy there. I quite enjoyed the Bulldogs Geelong game. Yeah, I thought that was a really good game.
Yeah,
reasonably good quality.
I got home Saturday night and watched that as well.
Mm-hmm.
Just obviously hadn't enough football. Mm-hmm. It was a quality game. Yeah.
I think
standard-wise, I thought that game and the GWS... And
that was Gold what I was going to get to next, games. Was GWS winning by 28 points, but the score actually didn't reflect how good a quality it was. Richmond just going down to St Kilda by 7 points. Obviously, you were at that game there, mate.
Yeah.
What are your takeaways from that?
Look, it was a good game in terms of a contest. Probably disappointed both sides that I would have thought Nord Oval, if you do your research, Nord Oval, you can't really aim to go defensive to the school side.
Yep.
The ball gets blown and goes out on the full.
Mm-hmm.
Pickett did it twice. I think there was seven or eight out on the full for the day. It might even be more. Where I thought, hang on, you've got to go more down the middle and it'll blow that way anyway.
Right. Yes.
So I was disappointed with both sides in that regard.
Yep. I know when I played at Nord, our rule was the center line, no more than 10 metres past that center line or you're in trouble.
Because
basically.
It blows.
Yeah. Yep.
And that happened twice. And you could see the surprise look on the player's face. Well, hang on.
Yeah, where did
once
that happen?
It's happened once, let's get... Yeah, and some of the kicking for goal will punch it low. It was windy down low Sunday, I will say that, which does wind affect standard more than anything.
Yes.
But both sides' disposal was pretty average to half. Like, I think St Kilda at half time had 24 inside 50s for one goal.
Yep.
So, that was a bit bizarre.
And Nord Oval obviously hosting 18,500, which was a very good result in the scheme of things, packed out all day, so we'll obviously hear about that a little bit more over the next couple of weeks.
People are going, how is that as a sellout? It's not, I've been at Nord Oval when there's been 20,000 there.
Well, OHS has a big say these days.
Safety standards have changed. The railing in the outer. Admit, I've looked at it. It had me a bit dumbfounded where it was. I didn't actually think it served a purpose apart from cutting down numbers.
Yes,
because there was the walkway there anyway. As someone who's been to Nord.
Yep.
Obviously, 8 billion times.
Mm-hmm.
So a couple of things there I couldn't work out. Also, the other part, this has me completely beat. So concussion at the moment is the number one issue in football, right? But the AFL and the broadcasters decided that they wanted a new camera angle behind the goals, so the netting got taken down.
Right.
So... In other words, we won't worry if a ball
hits a spectator
and knocks them out, but we will apply her. It was exactly like...
The lightning.
Lightning, yeah. Hang on, 36 players run off, but 100 security guards rush on. So on the where you're rating almost lives. And, dumbfounded, because the first thing I went at Nord on Saturday was...
Why are they taking it down?
Oh, no, was it on Friday, sorry. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to remember when the game was. was, where's the net? And then I chased up and found out why. Mm-hmm. That just defies
logic
again.
Finish us off on the gather round there, Collingwood defeating Hawthorn, which was an entertaining seesawing game. And then obviously the Ginevan side story to it all made it very, very interesting viewing, that's for sure. And yeah, Collingwood, they're just hanging around, and that's probably the scary part about it, because if they do get it right, they're going to be a team to continue to watch out for.
Yeah, I think we watched a bit of that game after the Richmond St Kilda out the front at Nord, a few of us. Sort of just glimpsing at that while we were chatting, really. And then, that game's over.
Yep.
And not really worry about it. And then
all of a sudden
drive home and turn on the score. Oh, shit, this is game on. So, yeah.
It was definitely a good comeback by Hawthorn. And I think they're going to surprise a lot of teams this year. And we've already talked about that as well. All right, let's get on to this week's games, mate. Melbourne v. the Lions. Who you got?
I'll go Melbourne in terms of in Melbourne.
It is in Melbourne at the MCG. I go with Melbourne as well. We've got the Bulldogs v Essendon. This is going to be an interesting clash because Essendon are going to be licking their wounds a little bit.
Yeah, I'll toss a coin there. I wouldn't mind seeing the sides, but at this stage I'll go Bulldogs.
I will go Bulldogs at this stage as well. GWS v St Kilda at Marnica Oval, mate.
I'll go GWS.
I'll go GWS as well.
At Marnica.
Absolutely. Carlton v Adelaide at Marvel. We haven't really seen Marvel in action this year yet.
Carlton.
Good man. Go the Blues. The Suns v the Hawks at People First Choice Stadium in Gold Coast.
I'll go
the Suns as well. They were very impressive last week, even though they did go down. Port Adelaide v the Dockers at Adelaide Oval.
I'll go Port Adelaide.
I will go Port Adelaide as well. Go the Dockers. Geelong v North Melbourne at GMHBA Stadium.
Geelong.
I will go Geelong as well. And West Coast v Richmond at Optus.
Oh, okay. Whew.
That is a tough one.
That is probably the hardest game to tip for the round. I'll still go Richmond, but I really, in that one, that's a 50-50 game.
No certainty either. Look, I'm going to pick an upset. I'm going to say West Coast are going to get off to a win. Collingwood and Sydney both have their buys. All right, mate, let's take a very, very quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk the SNFL, SNFLW, the soccer, and past players, but coming up next, Jackson Callow.
You're listening to the Game On Podcast. We'll be right back after this short break.
Are dents and scratches putting a dent in your day? Introducing Roger Steen Crash Repairs Adelaide, your trusted solution for automotive woes. With over two decades of expertise, Roger Steen Crash Repairs guarantees top-notch service, restoring your vehicle to its former glory in no time. From minor dings to major collisions, our skilled technicians handle it all with precision and care, using state-of-the-art equipment and techniques.
Roger Steen Crash Repairs saved my car. It looks brand new.
Fast, friendly and reliable. I wouldn't trust anyone else with my vehicle. Don't let accidents slow you down. Visit Roger Steen Crash Repairs Adelaide at 14 Penner Avenue, Glynde, for quality service you can count on. And here's a special offer just for our listeners. Mention this podcast and receive a $100 discount on your repair. Roger Steen Crash Repairs Adelaide. Excellence in every repair.
Local legends.
All right, mate, we kick off with the SNFL, the SAV Victoria. Jackson Callow obviously on the line, and welcome, Jacko.
Fresh from the Victoria South Australian State game, and of course we'll also talk about round one, the more important game. So Jacko, well done on the weekend, mate, and give us your overview of the weekend and the whole state experience, mate.
Oh, thank you. Thanks for having me, boys. It was obviously a great week, and it was an honour to be representing the state in the game against Victoria on the weekend. There's a lot of good players in there, and I feel like I was probably the young pup in the team actually this week, which was quite funny. But no, I really enjoyed it. being, you know, working with Twig and Revo and Serge and all the other coaches around the state, you know, it was an eye-opening experience, and it was really, really cool experience to you know, create relationships with them and also, you know, learn off other coaches as well and see what the other boys are like, you know, who we play against, you know, during the season. But, you know, for a week we got to team up together and, you know, become mates and build relationships and, come out game day and try and work together, which we did pretty well, and we got the job done.
Mate, thanks for joining us once again. You know, being as part of the South Australian team, how much time have you guys spent together? Because it sounded like on the telecast that the Victorians hadn't had too much time together, but I think you South Australian guys had been together for a little while at least.
Well, no, wasn't too much different. We came together for the first time on the Tuesday night before the game and had a main session together and a meeting, and then we also trained on Thursday night when we found out the actual team that was going to be playing. So that was it. We only caught up with each other twice before the game, where, you know, Victoria, I think, may have trained on the Thursday night and all travelled together, but, you know, they weren't just Victorians. They also had...
Yeah, Boyd Woodcock from Southport. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
What did so go through the experience in general. Where do you think playing in the state footy can help your own footy going forward, mate?
I felt like, you know, the first thing I noticed when we were training on the Tuesday night is when you're training with a good, you know, good group of players, you know, you've got 23 boys, 25 boys out there who are the best in the league, you know. Training with better boys makes you a better player. You know, the higher the skills, the higher you perform. I feel like, you know, just being out there with the likes, you know, McBean and Hosey being up forward and, you know, and Reynolds, it was a cool experience for myself as a younger key forward in the comp. And, you know, being around them, I was able to learn off a few experiences that, you know, they've been around for a long time. And even though we're, you know, competition when it comes to the normal league,
yeah,
during the normal week, you know, just on game day for a week, just to be able to help each other. And and for me, basically, to learn off them was something I was really appreciative of.
Well, we sort of have to ask, what did Twig say at quarter time? Because Victoria sort of jumped you guys a little bit. Was it a case of head down, bum up and do the hard yards?
Well, it was funny. I don't think any of us were really too worried. You know, our backs were massive for us in the first quarter, but, you know, Twig came out and I think he did say, you know, we couldn't have done much worse. So there's only up from there. And I think, you know, we went out there in the second quarter and, you know, speaking to Twig and the other coaches at the break, we realised, you know, where we were lacking at the start and what they had come out and done to start the game. So we just made a couple of little changes and just went out there and played our way. And next minute, you know, we're back within 2 points at the halftime break and we went on to win by, I think, 2 or 3 goals. So.
Yeah, hopefully Herdy might have picked up a few things for this week with watching those three, mate.
Yep.
So just a huge buzz though to play it, to wear the big red Guernsey. I'm sure your dad and your family down there would have, you know, and that sort of thing. It was a pretty reasonable crowd down at Glenelg too, mate.
Yeah, there was actually. It was cool that we got such a good turnout to start with, and also to bring back, you know, a bit of the state of origin against Victoria. I think playing in both the comps, I think the VFL and the SANFL were the two best comps outside the AFL, and probably the reason me being back in South Australia is because of SANFL, I think, is the best comp. So
yep.
It was good to show to the Victorians that we mean business over here. But to put on the big red was also a very, very honourable experience for myself. I mean, I'm a Tasmanian and I'll always be a Tassie boy, and I got to grow up wearing the map and also always wanting to play for it. And, you know, just to be able to share the experience over here and learn a few different ways that the South Australia guys go about their footy was an eye-opening experience for me and something I'll never forget.
And let's go back to round one, too, in terms of SANFL-wise. Great night, mate, out at the home of football against Sturt that night, mate.
We talked about that one, obviously, a couple of weeks ago, and you were hopeful that everything was going to gel, and that's exactly what happened.
Yeah, exactly. I think the best thing out of that was just we went in there with no expectations. We just didn't go in there and play our way. And I think we just did everything right. We had a lot of small wins and I think everyone just played their role. I think, no, besides Boydie, you know, we didn't really have many boys that stood up and had a huge game. It was just everyone played their role and did their part, which is exactly what we were asked for by the coaches. And we got the job done. It was a great way to start the year, and it was awesome to see so many Nord fans there as well.
And hopefully, hopefully this is a bit of buzz after gather round and comes. Hopefully there's a really big crowd this Friday night as well.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I mean, there's no reason why there shouldn't be. We're coming up against the reigning premiers. You know, we've come off a good win, and it's going to be the only game, I think, on Friday night at the parade. So, yeah, I don't see why people wouldn't get there and continue their support for us.
You obviously played in the state game, but, you know, you've been back at training at Norwood this week. And is it a case of everyone's a little bit fresh after a big pre-season? Round one is obviously big for everybody, and then the week off for most players. Have they come back refreshed and ready and rearing to go?
Yeah, I mean, it feels like we're going into round one again in a way. All the boys are ready to go. And I feel like just knowing that we've got the first one out of the way and done with, we can just play with a bit more freedom again. I think, you know, the first quarter, we sort of, it was a very contested ball game. And I don't think we're up at quarter time. I can't quite remember, to be honest. But, you know, as the game got going after half time, and we sort of played our way and got going, you know, we took off. So I feel like having the first one to the belt, kicked and thrown away, now we can move on and just focus on this week's game. And the boys are all pretty fresh, didn't take any injuries out of the game. So, and us boys that play on the weekend too, like, we, you know, we had a big game, but we've all recovered well. We all trained main session fully last night with the team, and now we're all ready to go.
I think personally too, Jacko, yourself, you know, injury-riddled year last year, frustration came back once and the ankle wasn't right and then had to do it, you know, another time off. Probably another game now at the start of the year just to get conditioning into your body, and that overall probably is a good thing.
Yeah, exactly right. Now, like, I think I've played, what, four games now this year already, and we're only coming into round two this week. So I feel like I'm as fit as I've ever been over the pre-season. I got myself in good shape, and, you know, even with my 2K, I got down to my PB time I've ever had. So I'm feeling good, feeling fit, feeling strong, and no, I can't wait to see what the season unholds. Hopefully I can have an injury-free season and play every game.
Reserves had a pretty good win as well. So competition for spots, or is it unchanged? Go with the winning formula from round one.
Oh, it's always hard to change a winning team.
It is, isn't it?
I think that's the strength that we're going to have this year at Norwood is, and like Glenelg showed last year, they had a big depth in their team, and you know, they went on to win the flag in both the league and the reserves. And this year, you know, look at our team and the whole list. Really, is a lot of boys playing reserves footy at the moment who definitely could be playing senior footy. So I don't know, you know, what's going to happen and what's going to happen going forward. But I think everyone who's playing reserves even isn't getting their head down. They're still, you know, they know that they can play, and we're all one big team, so it's all going to work out during the year. But just to see, we, you know, both got a win on the weekend or last Friday or Thursday night, the best way to start the season.
Certainly better start than last year, put it that way, mate.
Yeah, definitely a lot better.
Hey, Jacko,
thanks for
greatly
joining
appreciated.
Us today. Yeah, and talking about the state game, but obviously a bit of fun there with Nord at the end.
And I'm sure we'll annoy you again, and look forward to catching up Friday night. Jacko, you'll certainly hear me from the scoreboard. All the best, mate.
No, appreciate it, boys. Thanks for having me. And, hopefully we get the win on Friday night. We'll see you there.
See you, mate.
Thanks, mate.
Thanks. Bye.
And we thank Jacko there for his time. And
thanks, Jacko.
And obviously talking about the state game, but obviously round one we did cover a little bit last week, but on to round two, mate. Nord v Glenelg at the parade on Friday night. Looking forward to this one.
Yeah, looking forward to it. Look, I will go for Glenelg, obviously. I hope I'm wrong.
Well, we both went for the opposition last week and it got us over the line, so maybe I should go for Glenelg as well this week as well. Hoping a big crowd at the parade as well. Obviously, the reigning premiers, Nord getting off to a good start last week. And Festival of Footy has just left the state, so everyone's on a bit of a high wanting to watch more footy, hopefully.
Yep.
The Eagles v North Adelaide. This is going to be a cracking game down at Montine Oval there, at Oval Avenue.
Oval Avenue with the pasties of Spicer. I'll go Woodville West Torrens.
I'll go Woodville as well. North Adelaide, I'm just not sure. I was hopeful for them at the beginning of the season, but I don't know at the moment. So, I'm going to go Woodville, home ground advantage there. Centrals v Adelaide.
I'm going to go for the Dogs out at home.
I'm going to go Centrals as well. I think they're very, very impressive, and we've picked them as our big improvers for this year. The Bloods v Port Adelaide.
Yeah, I'd like to see the Finlayson going out. It probably actually hurts them.
Yep, and this is at Wakery as well. This is at Wakery. Number.
Yeah, I'll probably go Port, but I think that's a toss of the coin.
Yeah, West Adelaide weren't too bad last week either. So, look, I'm going to go Port Adelaide as well there. And to finish us out there at Flinders University Stadium, the Panthers v. the Double Blues, Sturt.
Yeah, I'll go for Sturt to rebound.
Absolutely. We won't go through the ladder because that has not changed since last week. Mate, let's go on to the women's SANFLW. We got Nord v. the Tigers there, but this time at Stratorama Stadium.
Yeah, I'll go Glenelg.
Got the Bulldogs v. the Bloods.
Yeah, I'll go the Dogs, but yeah, yep.
I'll go the Dogs there as well. Yeah. The Eagles v. the Roosters.
I'll go the Eagles.
And Sturt v. the Panthers.
I'll go the Panthers.
Go the Panthers there as well. Once again, the ladder hasn't changed from last week, so we don't need to really go through that one. All right, let's move on to soccer. Adelaide United played Perth Glory away. They were 2-0 down after about 10 minutes, and it was looking like it was going to be an absolute hiding, but 10 minutes after that, it was 2-2.
Yeah, some good goals, wasn't it? Some good goals, actually. Yeah. Really well worked out, and Irrapunda played. I thought it was his last game the week before, so I'm not sure where that's sitting.
One of his deliveries through was absolutely perfect.
Absolute lace out,
yep.
The old football description-wise. But absolutely. Yeah, so at least they're still hanging in there. Unlikely, but hanging in there.
Adelaide currently sitting ninth after 23 rounds, eight wins, four losses, 11. Eight wins, four draws, 11 losses. They're only a couple of points behind seventh, which gives them a good opportunity to make the top six.
Yeah.
But this week against MacArthur, it's a whole nother ball game altogether. All right, mate, let's take another very, very quick break. When we come back, Robbie Neal.
I'm Stephen Rowe, and you're listening to the Game On podcast.
Past players, past legends, past legends.
Today we're privileged to be speaking to Robbie Neal, a.k.a. not the real Bob Neal. We'll get to that. 92-94 at Sydney, 21 games, 9 goals. 96-97, 23 games, 7 goals at St Kilda. Landed at the Parade in 98. So 98-05, 134 games, 240 goals. Leading goal scorer 5 times. Advertiser Team of the Year 99. 3 state games. And currently, and we will get to that later on, the development role with the female footy with SANFL. Welcome aboard, Robbie.
Thanks, Rulebook, and great to have a chat to you, mate.
Thanks for joining us, mate. We'd like to get a bit of background on our guests, and we'd like to start with some of your junior stuff. Where did you play your juniors, and we'll work in through there?
Yeah, well, I grew up in Canberra. So my mum and dad moved from Melbourne sort of back about 1960 to Canberra with my two brothers. They were babies at the time, and anyway, I had another brother, another sister and me. There was 5 of us in the family, and given they were from Victoria, footy was, I suppose, in the blood from an early age. And I attended St Edmunds College as a young kid, and Alex Jezelenko went to school at St Eddie's, and my best mate, Troy Gray, who I played with at Sydney, and St Kilda, and he played for West Adelaide as well, so we went to school together there. And I went through and through all the the underage state programs, Teal Cup, etc. And then I was listed by Sydney at the end of 1990, and I was still an under 16 because these were the days where you still had under 19s within the AFL club. So I was listed by the Swans and then moved up there after I finished year 12 in 91. Moved up there in 92. Had 3 years at the Swans and then was part of a trade to St Kilda after that as part of the Tony Lockett trade and ended up there for 3 years.
Oh, you wear that as a name to be used in a trade trade scratcher.
What was life like in the ACT as far as football goes? You know, you sort of think of the Eastern Seaboard there being more rugby heartland. What's the AFL football or Aussie rules football like up there?
Yeah, well, Pete, when I was growing up as a young fella, Canberra was a reasonably transient environment in terms of people coming in and with government jobs, etc. So you had a lot of South Australians, Victorians, Western Australians moving there for work, and plus you had a very strong region in the Riverina and Albury and all the rest of it, and particularly country Victoria, and Canberra clubs had a fair bit of money, so they could pay. They had all the poker machines. There's no sort of hoteliers that are making a fortune out of poker machines in Canberra. They're all licensed to community clubs or sporting clubs.
Yep.
So all the money generated there, so they could sort of fork out a fair bit and retain guys. So, yeah, a lot of clubs were paying pretty good money, and there were some really good players running around. A lot of ex, Sandful and VFL players at the time were coming through Canberra pretty much at the end of their careers, but it lent itself to some pretty good footy. So as a young kid, you know, it wasn't uncommon for me to go to Manuka Oval and watch, you know, Manuka and Ainslie or Manuka and Eastlake in front of about 10,000 people. So
we had
huge crowds in the 70s, in particular in the early 80s.
Out of that, Scratcher, we had InterVarsity in Canberra in 85, and functions were at the Ainslie Footy Club, and I just couldn't get over how big that was. Where Pete, you actually walked in, the first thing you saw on the door on as you walked in was the photos of this week's side, and they were huge, like Ford Pocket, Robbie Neal, Pete Matthews, Full Ford, etc. And so there were pokies there, and then there was a room upstairs, and then another room upstairs where the presentation dinner was seated 600. So it was it was massive. And that was all pokies, exactly.
Like we had the Mulrooney medal there. That's how big it was. So the league best and fairest used to be held at the Ainslie Footy Club, and they always had big functions there too now, you know. So and sort of outside of Southport is probably, you know, especially at that time in the 90s and the early 2000s, probably the richest club outside the AFL. So, certainly raked in the money, but they had a really good business model. It was a club that generated a lot of money, and as a result was always able to you know, get good recruits. You know, Cowboy Neal coached there. And then another fellow by the name of Brett Hannam, who actually came over and
played for Centrals.
So Hannam actually coached me back in Canberra as well. Wonderful fella. They're able to attract really good players. And, footy was in the blood early on, and I had a lot of mates who, you know, whose parents were from other parts of Australia, you know, not necessarily New South Wales or Queensland, but who had footy in the blood as well. And given that I went to a rugby union school, which was probably one of the best rugby union schools in Australia, St Edmunds College, which has sort of produced George Gregan, who's a sort of a mate from school, and Michael Maguire, who's going to coach New South Wales in the State of Origin matches, sort of in our circle of mates in my year. You had a lot of guys who went on to go and play for the Wallabies, school teachers who were coaches of the Australian schoolboys team. So it was a pretty strong rugby environment. And the footballers, we used to have to sort of fend for ourselves a little bit. You know, we'd do 20K walkathons to raise money for a scrum machine, which probably didn't go down well with the footballers. But that was life, mate, in the ACT and putting up with the cold, mate, which was another matter.
Yeah, that's true. Who did you debut for Sydney against, Scratcher?
I played against the Brisbane Bears at Carrara back in those days. Mal, so that was the second last round of 92. So I ended up sort of starting on a wing on a bloke wearing number 56. I think he ended up a pretty good player, Michael Voss. So
he did all right.
Lazy kick
there, mate. He was 16, and he was about 16, I reckon. I was 18. I don't think we'd had a shave between us. So it was a funny game, and we both remember it, and it's quite funny when we used to have a chat to each other, sort of in the cafe down there at Adelaide Oval when Port were training at Adelaide Oval. I'd seen at work. So, we remember those days fondly.
Righto, Scratcher. There's one thing here, Pete. This is talking with Robbie. Someone who's been around the traps, it's unusual for me to virtually have my jaw drop, and it does from this.
Oh, hang on, breaking news here, mate.
No, tell us about the incredible and, I will be honest, insane Sydney training torture session you got put through, Scratcher.
Yeah, that was Gary Buchanan was our coach back in 1992. The poor bugger, like he was 34 years of age. He'd been a successful clubs both in Western Australia, playing the Waffle there, but particularly Hawthorn, and won a lot of premierships, you know. So I'd actually made my debut on the Saturday night at Carrara, and we had one game to go, which was the following Friday night, I think, against Richmond. So anyway, after we played the game at the Carrara, I think a few of the boys went out on the Gold Coast, you know, and had a good time and getting home at all hours. And Bucky had sort of seen this happen, and he was probably sick of the culture that was manifesting itself in the footy club. And this is sort of post Dr. Edelston day. So, you know, the money had sort of dried up and things were a bit tight, and probably just the mood around the club had changed a bit. The crowds are dropping off, et cetera. So on the Monday night, we lobbed up at training and Bucky said, right, get your gear on, put your runners on. And usually Monday night was, we used to do a fair bit of running on a Monday night anyway, like it was, you know, the run the soreness out. Yep. But it was probably wasn't that scientific. It was more just to get active and get moving. But he took the warm-up and we jogged a couple of laps of the SCG and then we ended up sort of near the member stand and out onto Driver Avenue and then into Moore Park. So we were sort of running after Bucky and it started to rain. And there was a lot of guys who couldn't train, especially the older fella, Stevie Wright, you know, after a game, he's had bone on bone. He couldn't train. Dennis Carroll, a few other guys, you know, who were at the end of their careers. And we ended up going out there and he said, Roddy, I'm going to give you you've got it easy up in Sydney. The media don't get a hold of you and all this sort of stuff. You've got pretty good weather. You know, I'm going to give you a bit of a taste of what pre-season's going to be like. So we went out there and there's a grass ski slope next to the Moore Park Bowling Club. And we ran up that. It's probably about 120 metres long.
Yeah.
It's got undulations along sort of as you go. And I reckon we ran up that about 50 times. And you had to do 20 push-ups, 20 sit-ups after each one. And if you end up winning one, you got to the next one to rest. And I reckon I came second or third every time. I just couldn't get a rest. It was just a nightmare. So we kept going and we did that. And then we ran up at halfway about 25 times. And so we've been out there for about an hour and a half. We got back and he said, right, yeah, and we're jogging back. He said, right, everyone on your stomach. So we got on our stomachs. And he said, crawl back to me. And he kept backpedaling. And it was dark by this stage. And we sort of, it was just like if you took someone out in the parklands, in the South Parklands or whatever, and just made them crawl. And you're not actually not on the oval. You're sort of actually crawling through the trees. And
they mightn't get back in the South Parklands. Well, right? No, yeah, keep going.
He probably wouldn't. But anyway, there was sort of pebbles and it was rough grass and all the rest of it. So we did that about five times up in the end. You crawl for about 30 metres at a time. And then we ended up back at the SCG. And he said, get out in the oval in pitch darkness. So we went out there, no lights on, just the light that's cast from the member stand out onto the oval. And the trainers are sort of standing there waiting and for us to be attended to, just normal Monday clinic.
Yep.
Anyway, we've gone out there and we've done a whole heap of stuff, running 400s, crawling the length of the or wriggling the length of the centre square on our backs, which it takes a fair time, to do, even in the wet, and a whole range of things for about another hour. Anyway, we've got back into the change rooms, and when we were doing it, I could feel that I was injuring myself, but I was sort of numb, full of adrenaline. I wanted to get through it. I didn't want to show that I was going to give up, and all the boys were the same.
Yep.
And then we sort of got back into the rooms, and I had no skin on my thighs, on my knees. The next day, well, that night I actually went to bed, and I couldn't take. I had all the wounds dressed, and the trainers were there for a good hour and a half after the session, dressing players, making sure they were clean and all the rest of it. So I had everything strapped up, and went to bed, had second skin on, and all the rest of it. But overnight, the wounds had actually wet through the bandaging. I had to wear tracky pants to bed because I couldn't take anything off. It was just too sore through that and onto the sheets. And I had to sort of peel everything off the next morning. Anyway, I was living at the Swans boarding house at the time and our landlady, Anna, she was an elderly Irish lady, rang the club and said, look, someone needs to come out, pick Robbie up and take him to the hospital because he's not in a good way. So Michael Byrne, who was our reserves coach, Mick, came and picked me up.
Is that the ruckman?
He was the ruckman, yeah. Played for Melbourne and Hawthorne.
Yeah. Yep.
Good fella, Mick. And anyway, he drove me out to Five Dock, out to our doctor, who's his name is George Paponis. And George actually captained Canterbury Bankstown in rugby league. He'd retired by this stage. Anyway, I walked in the clinic and he said, what the F have you done? And I said, oh, this is a result from training. He said, I thought you'd been in a motorcycle accident and you'd actually skidded across bitumen. So that's the injuries that I'd see off that. Anyway, I had had everything dressed up and by George, he had to give me tetanus injections, etc. Anyway, I got back to the boarding house. This is on the Tuesday, so it was after the Monday training session. But the Monday was my dad's birthday and I was going to ring him after training to wish him happy birthday. How are you going? This is how training went, whatever. Yep. I didn't ring him. And he sort of wondered why, I think. And I rang the next day once I got home from the doctor and said, this is what's happened. So he and my mum and my brother drove up from Canberra and picked me up and took me back home because there was no way I wouldn't have been able to play for about 2 months. It was just so bad.
Crazy.
I didn't play, obviously, the following Friday night. A few of the other boys were sort of strapped up, but weren't moving that well. Needless to say, I think they got a bit of a hiding. But, yeah, so that was sort of it. And then I had to go back for the best and fairest. I sort of won the runner-up in the reserves, best and fairest that year, and I had to go back to Sydney. But Gary Buchanan actually had to come down to Canberra and see my mum and dad and myself and sort of address the situation. And he knew that he'd made an error in judgment, but he was just, you know, I think he felt really isolated and, you know, and having done a lot of coaching since, you know, he sort of probably didn't know at that time, coaches didn't get a lot of support. He was just trying to somehow get everyone to understand that, you know, footies is not, it's a great opportunity that you have. You've got to put everything into it. And I don't think he was sort of sure on actually how to work in an environment such as what we had, given that he'd spent, you know, his life in successful clubs and motivated, talented, hardworking people. So it was actually really interesting. And then, well, you know, probably round four the following year, he ended up getting sacked and Ron Barassi took over. So that's how that mess happened.
Wow, that's big. Even my jaw's on the ground now as well.
Yeah. So, to be honest, having done all that, there wasn't a pre-season training session that I knew I couldn't get through. So that was one thing that actually did to me mentally. You know, it probably scarred me a little bit mentally, but certainly there was nothing that was thrown in front of me that I couldn't complete after going through all that.
Well, stick with Sydney. Obviously, your first game is going to be one of the memorable games, but I know you only played 21 for Sydney. Was there another memorable game that you played for Sydney?
Probably the most memorable, I reckon, Pete, was we played Melbourne at the MCG.
When Osborne kicked 10?
No, he didn't. That was at the SCG, actually. Right. He kicked 10 that particular day, and it was their first win in ages. Yeah. I didn't play in that one. I reckon I might have played in the... No, I might have played in the twos that day. I reckon I was still once that happened with the crawling incident, I went home to Canberra and I didn't come back. I actually went home and played for my club, hoping to I was going to have the year in Canberra and then nominate for the draft and go somewhere else. But Sydney said to me because when Bucky was sacked, Ron Joseph and Ron Barassi took over the club. The AFL pretty much seconded them to Sydney to get things sorted up there. And Ron Joseph said to me, what will happen is that, you know, we'll delist you in June and then take your first pick in the June draft, which will tie you to us for another 3 years. So what I ended up doing is signing a contract and then allowing them to have an extra pick in the draft. So I went back and I was still commuting from Canberra, though. So I sort of played the last five senior games of the year for the Swans, but I was also on a couple of occasions playing for my club in Canberra as well. So there were a couple of games where I played an AFL game that same weekend as an ACTAFL game. So the AFL game came first. One was a Friday night, played on a Sunday, and another time I played on a Saturday in Melbourne and played on the Sunday in Canberra. So I was doubling up, which is not advisable now.
No.
Good way to get your game tally up quick, though, Scratcher.
It did. But, to answer your question, a game at the MCG, we beat Melbourne. They were, I reckon, 9-1 at the time in 94. Had a really good team. I mean, you had Schwartz, you had Lyon playing as forwards.
Tingo,
Glenn Lovett, Brett Lovett, Jimmy Steins was playing. You had some wonderful players there. And we played them at the MCG, and it was Dermot Brereton's first game for the Swans after the Raiden Talis injury where he got 7 weeks for stepping on his head. We ended up pulling it off. And because it was Ron's old club as well and people didn't give us a chance, you know, only probably maybe 20,000 were at the ground. Even the Melbourne supporters went to the snow that weekend. And we knocked them off, mate. And it was, to do that with the boys, because we were quite a close group at the Swans. Like we all lived with each other. That was probably the thing that makes the club quite unique, is that everyone's from sort of either country, New South Wales, the ACT, or interstate. There weren't many Sydney boys on the list, so everyone seemed to live with each other and in close proximity. So you have no family, you just got each other. So whilst we struggled on the footy field at times, but we were very close because of the friendships that you make just through spending a lot of time with each other.
And then Sydney, so that basically played its part paid its part out, which you could see was going to happen. And then, yeah, off to St Kilda, mate.
Yeah, that's right. I'd started pre-season with Sydney, so I'd already done a week of training. Anyway, we had a Thursday night off training, and I was at home. My flatmate at the time was Troy Gray, who I just mentioned before, and Troy was back in Canberra. I reckon he might have been uncontracted and was sort of, you know, waiting to sign his contract, so he wasn't training. So I was at home, and then I got a knock on the door, and it was Kevin Egan, who was the Swans footy manager, and he said, "Oh, where's Troy?" And I said, "Oh, he's still in Canberra. You know, he's coming back probably shortly once he signs his contract." And he said, "Oh, yeah." He said, "Well, it's actually you I want to speak to." And straight out, it was about 5 o'clock on a Thursday night. He said, "How would you feel about going to St Kilda?" And I said, "What?" And he said, "Look, you probably heard, you know, rumours about Lockett and all that sort of stuff. You know, we've had to do some negotiations with St Kilda to, you know, make sure that we can get the deal done. And they've asked for you as part of the trade. And how would you feel? You've got about an hour to make up your mind because we need to know tonight because the deadline's 1:30 tomorrow." Wow. And I said, "You're kidding." Anyway, I rang my dad and he'd already spoken to Stan Owls that day. And I didn't have a manager back then.
No.
You know, no one did really. So it was just sort of your dad or you, you know. So I rang dad and he said, he spoke to Stan and he said, "Look, how would you feel about it?" And I said, "Well, I've always sort of wanted to play in Melbourne. I think it'd be pretty good." Yeah, I had a bit of a row with Ron, sort of about 5 or 6 weeks to go before the end of the season. Anyway, I sort of thought, well, yeah, it might be a good idea to actually get out of here. So I ended up, moving down to the Saints. And 95, I had a pretty bad year with injury. I tore a hamstring and then broke my wrist, broke my scaphoid. So that's why I didn't play at all.
Yep.
And then came back in 96, played in an ANZAC Cup premiership and had a pretty good year. And then 97, had osteitis pubis most of the year, but I got picked sort of for the grand final. So
yeah, we'll get to that.
Pretty late, yeah.
We'll get to that. So how was it, you know, playing in a St Kilda, the ugliest trophy in the world, but playing in a premiership side, still a pretty big thing in terms of a club starved of success?
Yeah, well, the ANZAC Cup too, now, as you probably remember, well, in 1995, there was a campaign. It was called the SOS Save Our Saints campaign. And we were rattling tins to stay alive. So I'd gone from the Swans, who were on their knees financially, to St Kilda, who were in the same predicament. So, 1995, I remember at the end of the season, the club didn't have enough money to pay the players their match payments. So we didn't get paid until probably late January. And I remember selling my TV back to my parents so I could buy them Christmas presents. So that was AFL footy back in those days. Yeah. Like, everyone seemed to think blokes were big money. It certainly wasn't the case.
No.
So 1996, when we won the ANZAC Cup, I think we won, the prize money might have been, you know, maybe just over 100 grand.
That's what I reckon it was.
And winning it was our focus. It was like, okay, we want to get members. Membership's a really important part of our business plan, and we want to win the money as well. So we put everything into it to win it. And, we beat sort of Hawthorn round one pretty well, played the Crows over here, had a win, played West Coast, had a win, and then we played Carlton in the final, who were the premiers the previous year. They had a couple of guys out. Diesel didn't play, and I don't think Brattles might have played either, but... we had a pretty young team, but led brilliantly by Stewie Lowe, Nathan Burke, Rob Harvey, Nicky Winmar was best on ground. We got over the line and we beat them by about 10 goals, so we had a pretty good win. But that was the start of us actually starting to get things together at St Kilda. We'd started with leading teams and we'd start putting that leadership program in, and it bore the fruit for the, you know, the next couple of years to come.
Because you had a pretty reasonable year in 96 too.
Mm. St Kilda, yeah.
Yeah,
no, 90, but you
yeah,
personally.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. We just finished outside the finals. We finished 10th, I think. And we sort of had to win maybe the last game of the year against Hawthorn. We got done. But, yeah, it was sort of by the end of the year, we're actually quite tired. We put so much emotionally into early in the year. And we had a pretty young team. We're a bit buggered. So we ended up sort of finishing, unfortunately. But... yeah, the motivation going into the next preseason was huge, and it was the biggest preseason I've ever done. It was bloody hard, and we reaped the benefit though, the running and the lifting and all the rest that we did. We've gone from sort of being, not so much me, I mean, I'd been in the system a while, so I was naturally pretty strong, and by then I'd done a few pre-seasons, but, you know, guys, particularly Barry Hall, turned into a monster.
Yeah.
Even guys like, you know, Joel Smith put on weight, Tony Brown, Ozzie Jones, Andrew Thompson, Maxie Hudgeton, those sorts of guys just really started to develop. Jason Cripps at that time as well. So the younger brigade, Darryl Wakelin as well, you could now start to really compete against the best forwards physically. So we just started developing a team. When teams came up against St Kilda, they knew they could see us change enormously physically. So they were almost like, yeah, these guys mean business now. So and 97, yeah, the way the season panned out certainly proved that.
Was Robert Harvey as fanatical as what we saw from over the border here with his football?
Oh, hell yeah. Harves is unreal and very like-minded. I mean, I played with Anthony as well, and obviously Mal knows Anthony really well from his time captaining in Norwood. Different species in terms of, you know, their build and all the rest of it. Ant's a lot slighter than Rob. In terms of, I'd only seen one guy break Anthony Stevens in a game, and that was Rob, in terms of endurance and running, to the point where, yeah, Steve-O didn't want to go with him anymore. Like, it was, and he was an animal.
And look, while we're briefly chatting with Robert Harvey, we'll get back to you with 97. But full respect with Robert Harvey, 97, you know, St Kilda have lost the grand final. He could have easily gone, bugger, that's the end of footy.
Mm-hmm.
He was over watching Nord the next week to Anthony and up in the Redlegs Club afterwards and that when we were upstairs in those days and all that. He was blown away. He was said, there's as many people here as we would have had if we'd won it.
Mm.
And, so out of that. But look, back on a 97... scratcher. So you've played the first two games. As you said, you had problems with osteopubis and that. Then you've ended up, did you suspect you're a chance to play in the finals and in the grand final, or where did that all eventuate from?
Yeah, what ended up happening, Mal, so to take you back, round two, we played Brisbane at the Gabba and my groins had shot and they'd been pretty bad for about a month throughout the NSET Cup because we wanted to win that again, didn't win more money. And by round two, I'd played 10 games, and that's unheard of. So if you can imagine a player finishing round two and having played 10 games already for the season. So, and with that, I reckon we'd travelled interstate about six times as well. So, and as I said, we had the biggest pre-season of all time. So by round two, my groins are shot. So I ended up having sort of 5 weeks off, and I was having cortisone injections, right in your pubic synthesis. I never felt so vulnerable in all your life, mate, with a needle sort of down there, I tell you. So I used to go into the city bars every couple of weeks to get them done. Then I came back for about 5 weeks and it flared up again, had another five off. And then I came back and then I started playing reasonably well. But the hardest thing, mate, all I used to do was get like just almost a fistful of Tiger Balm and just rub it through the groins and all the rest of it and just deal with the burn. But somehow it used to sort of take the pain away from the actual OP until you cool down afterwards. But I sort of got through. But what Stan had done is that the team, and mind you, St Kilda were 1-6 after seven rounds.
Yeah.
97.
Yeah.
1-6. And the only win was against Collingwood in round three. So we didn't start well. And then won about 13 of the next 14 games after that. Maybe with one loss to the Bulldogs. But what happened was, with that 6 weeks to go, Stan said, right, he paired guys off and sort of said, right, if we lose so-and-so, then so-and-so's coming in. And he kept it pretty streamlined in terms of what selection was going to be. And my partner was Matty Young. So I was in the twos. Young, he was playing. And, you know, it would be, you know, Darryl Wakelin, David Sirikoski. It would be, Brett Cook, Lazar Vidovic or something like that, or Spider Everett, whatever. Yep. So he had everyone sort of paired off. It sort of got to a stage down to the grand final. Coming in, we beat Brisbane first round of the finals. In the seniors, our reserves made the finals but got knocked out. So I played pretty well in that and leading up into that. Then we had a week off and then it was the prelim final and it was pretty wet. And Stan rang me the afternoon of the game and said, because it was Friday night, he said, look, I think you might be playing tonight. We might go pull a tall out and play you. And I said, oh, no worries. He said, bring your gear to the game, make sure you're ready, all that sort of stuff. So I did. About an hour before the game, he said, no, we're going to go in as selected. So went up to the stand, and then obviously the boys blew North Melbourne away. And then, yeah, in the rooms, it was pretty hard afterwards. It was sort of like far out. What's, yeah, we're going to miss out on this, you know, the boys who didn't play. You're happy with the guys, but yeah, you're sort of, you know, everyone goes into their own sort of, you know, I suppose, self-reflection and, you know,
what if, around
the circumstances. And because St Kilda making a grand final doesn't happen every year, let's face it. So we were thinking about what was going to happen. But what had happened was is Matty Young had been in rehab with me quite a bit throughout the year. He was getting himself up for games, but he was having epidurals in his back. He had a really bad back. And Young and I, we got really well. Like we did a lot of training together and rehab as well. And just to get himself up for games was amazing that whole year. But his back seized up in the prelim, and he couldn't sort of get off the bench to get out there. And I don't think San trusted him to be able to get through a grand final, get through the week and play in the grand final. So, and I was his direct replacement. But I remember driving home from the game. I stopped into the Shell Servo on Punt Road, and I ran into Bob Skilton. And I knew Bob from when I played at the Swans, you know. So we used to come to a lot of past player things and come and speak to us and all that sort of stuff. And he said, "You never know, son, what might happen this week. You know, someone might drop out." And I'm like, "Oh, I don't know, Bob." Anyway, see you later. Thanks for the well wishes. And anyway, unfortunately for Youngie, he wasn't able to get up, and I was his direct replacement. But I didn't find out until our team meeting late on the Thursday night. So before a Saturday game.
Okay, Ned.
Well, do you think that was a good thing, not knowing?
Oh, probably. But you had all these people in your ear going, "I think you're in it." And because Stan had sort of made the point, if someone's out, you're in. It was sort of, no one would sort of tell you. But I just made sure I'd prepared as well. But the other thing, what I didn't know is that I didn't know what role I was going to be able to play during the game. Like, it was sort of, you start on the bench, and then I ended up only playing sort of the last 4 minutes of the second, third, and fourth quarter. So I only played about 12. In total. So you sort of just got on there, and you didn't really have a sort of a sense of belonging, really, with what you're doing. I sort of felt that way anyway. And that was the game, sort of played a bit like that way. You know, in, there were some guys who never even got out on the ground, in particular, when you had Rob Harvey, Burke, and all the rest of it, they played 100% game time all the time. They wouldn't come off unless they were in a blood rule or something, you know. So the rotations were a lot more reduced back in those days, and that was the way the game was played.
So then you've played in the grand final, seemingly almost been the scapegoat, because how in the hell did you get delisted after being selected for the grand final?
I don't know. But funnily enough, Ron Joseph, who obviously was our administrator at the Swans, he ended up taking over our general manager football role. He became a player manager. He left the Swans after sort of Ron Barassi, so end of 95. And he was actually sort of my player manager for that year. And I said to Ron, "Look, my contract had expired at the end of 97, and I was looking to sign again." And I ended up training for 5 months uncontracted because of the year I had.
I thought there was something weird,
I trained uncontracted, and because of the year I had, I didn't really have any sort of weight to be able to go and play standoff, you know what I mean? So I had to go to training every but at the same time, I was ringing Ron going, "Well, what happens if I do my knee? All the rest of it, I'm stuffed," you know what I mean? And the other thing, I had my personal training business at the footy club. So I had a small room and a studio set up, and Troy Gray and myself had it. And I'd work at another place, another big gym called the King Club, which is a bit similar to, say, the Arc at Campbelltown. You know, it was big for that time. Trevor Barker, who passed away a couple of years prior, used to be the centre manager, and I worked there. And I also had my own PT business as well. So I had my business at the club. And anyway, I got through that. And then after Christmas, I said to Ron, "Look, this is getting a bit too close. We're playing trial games soon, and I'm not sure what I should do." So he rang the club, and the club said, "Look, yep, no worries." And he rang me back and said, "Look, they're stuffing around. I want you to go into AFL House and nominate for the draft." And I said, "No, I want to play for St Kilda. I don't want to play anywhere else."
Yep.
So he said, "Look, I'll ring you back in 5 minutes." So he rang back 45 minutes later and said, "Nah, we're all sorted next week. We're sitting down and we'll sign him next week." And I said, "Oh, thank God."
Yep.
Anyway, I went to training the next week. We did a morning training session, and Stan Owls said, "Rob, can you come upstairs, have a chat? No rush, mate. Just when you have a shower, whatever, come upstairs and see me." So I went upstairs. And this is the 10th of February, by this stage. And I had played in a couple of internals by that stage. And he said, mate, the club made a decision late last night to list you. And I was gobsmacked because I lost my two forms of income there and then.
Yeah.
And I said, right, what the hell do I do now? and he sort of went on and said, look, yeah, your leadership's been, yeah, great for a young guy, all that sort of stuff, you know, those buttoning you up and then basically send you on the way. Yeah. A lot of respect for Stan. Stan's a wonderful man. He's a terrific fella, Stan Owls. But you're just not in a position to be able to sort of process all that at that time, particularly, you know, February. And I'm thinking, what do I do? So, so I walked out, sat in my car for about an hour out in the car park, trying to work it out, what I do. Rang Ron Joseph, said this has happened. He was shocked. So what I don't know is whether Ron had some dialogue with him and he made sort of maybe some sort of threat towards him and said, look, you know, if this doesn't happen, he'll do this and whatever. And I'm not sure whether they got angry with it. I don't know. I've heard that story off a couple of people who were board members, but I still don't know to this day what happened. And anyway, I found out, I was out. And what had happened, though, now is that clubs had committed to guys throughout the preseason.
Yeah.
They will take you in the preseason draft. So, you know, let's say Jason Danilchenko was North Melbourne, he went to Hawthorn, and they said, well, you train with us and we'll pick you. So there was only so many picks in the draft, and guys had already been committed to guys. So when I came out in February, I couldn't go anywhere. So Andy Collins rang me and said, would you come down to Sandringham? So I trained down at Sandringham for 3 weeks. I knew a few guys who'd played at St Kilda before who were down there. And then Glenn Rosser rang me. And funnily enough, Glenn Rosser had Troy Gray's number. He was trying to get Troy to play there. Troy got delisted in October.
Right. Yeah.
So yeah. Troy,
I remember that now.
I actually gave him Troy's number. But because he rang me, he had my number by this time and he kept it. So he rang me in February and said, how would you feel about coming to Adelaide? We'll come over for a train and whatever. And I said, oh, yeah, why not?
Liking this podcast? Please like, rate, and subscribe.
We thank Robbie for his time there. We're going to split that interview, obviously, into two halves because we thought it was only going to be about a 20-30-minute interview, but we went well and truly
that. I knew Scratcher way too well for that to be the case, Pete. Yeah.
Absolutely. All right, let's get on to Happy Days, mate.
Happy Days.
All right, wishing Jordan Dawson from the Adelaide Football Club a happy birthday, born on April the 9th, pick number 56 in the 2015 National Draft. Dawson was born in Kingston in the southeast. He moved to Adelaide in his youth and attended Scotch College in his teenage years. Very, very good player.
He is. Probably not. He's down a bit on his form of the last couple of years, so and they desperately need him.
Just to recapture that a little bit?
Yeah, they really do. It's showing as soon as your class player's not quite as good playing as well, how it impacts everything else. Mm-hmm. His disposal hasn't been quite as classy.
Not as sharp, yep.
Missing some goals. They really need him to turn it on.
Although I thought against Melbourne he was very, very
good. Yeah,
he just
better.
Sort of got that little bit of rhythm back, which was very good.
Hopefully.
Dawson was drafted by Sydney with their third selection at 56 overall in the national draft. He made his debut in a one-point loss to Collingwood at the Sydney Cricket Ground in round 3, 2017. After spending periods of time in the NEAFL, Dawson began to find form in 2020 when the Swans were struggling a little bit, and at the end of 2021, he requested a trade back to Adelaide. Despite the speculation that the Swan might end up at Port Adelaide, can you imagine if he was at Port Adelaide right now?
Yeah.
Oof, that is a scary thought with Horn Francis, Rosie Butters, and Dawson in that team. But
no, thanks.
We won't scare too many Crows supporters there. Obviously, Dawson took over from the captaincy from Rory Sloane in February of 2023. Yeah. We move on to cricket. Curtly Ambrose in 1990, 8 for 45 against England at Bridgetown.
Oh, great bowler. Absolute.
Now, I have to ask, because you're a cricket nut, the wristbands that he would wear, do you think that was tactical, or do you think that he was just wearing them all the time and on this occasion it got pulled up?
Bit of both.
Bit of both?
Yeah. But it wasn't Dean Jones' finest moment.
Fair call. Also in cricket, mate, in 2005, Australia defends the World Cup against India by 98 runs.
Yeah, and fantastic again. World Cup, our record in the World Cup.
It's pretty impressive.
Is fantastic.
It is pretty impressive, isn't it?
And probably this year for mines, even better again.
Absolutely. Basketball, 1959. We're going back a fair way here, but Bill Sharman hits the NBA record of 59 consecutive three throws.
That's a fair effort, isn't it?
It is an impressive effort for sure.
It only beat me by 59.
Yeah, it probably beat me by about 58. So there you go. All right, let's move on. Golf, 1962, 25th US Masters Tournament in Augusta. South African player Gary Player beats defending champion Arnold Palmer and an amateur Charles Coe by one stroke to become the first international player and also the first Monday finish because of the rain.
I admit it's easily my favourite golf tournament. I just love the course. I love the tradition.
Yes.
It's
one of those bucket list items,
yeah,
isn't it?
It is, yeah. And I'm not a golf nut, but yeah, Augusta.
Yep.
Easily number one for me.
Absolutely. And to finish us off, happy days today, mate. 1961, the Washington Senators play their first game in franchise history with the 35th President, John F. Kennedy, in attendance. Unfortunately, they lose 4-3 to the Chicago White Sox.
Should have brought JFK on in the ninth innings to get him up.
Could have been
a tactical
sub. There you go. I like that one.
Yeah, it wouldn't have been John Howard. Put it that way.
Let's scoot into the extra time big finish, mate.
Extra time big finish.
All right, we'll whiz through these because it's been a huge day with interviews. Tennis, Australia v Mexico in Brisbane this coming week at Pat Rafter Arena.
Yeah.
Good to have.
Snuck up.
Good to have the Australians back on home soil too, in a home and away type format.
Hasn't received great publicity, so we'll see how it goes.
One more on tennis. Tomic back inside the top 250. It's not a great stat, is it? But in 2015, he was 18 in the world. It's a long way back for a 31-year-old when you think about it.
He's right up there in my could-have-been team, yeah.
Shoulda, coulda, wouldas.
Yep.
Fair call. Yep. All right, let's move on to the NBA. It's the last week of the regular season. Looks like it's going to be a pretty tight finish over in the Western Conference.
Yeah, so it's going to go down to the wire, that's for sure.
So looking forward to that, and we might report a little bit more deeply on that next week.
Yep.
The NRL, is the State of Origin still the best, one of the best sporting events on the Australian calendar?
Look, it's probably the most I follow rugby in terms of State of Origin.
Well, because that's going to be coming up, obviously, in the next period.
You look upon it as a bit of jealousy as a footy person. Mm-hmm. It is one thing they do better. We can't deny that.
Is that a case of because of obviously national selection?
Yeah, national selection.
So they've got to keep it, whereas we don't have that luxury, do we? The Dolphins, Cowboys, Storm, Shark, Raiders, Warriors, Seagulls, and the Panthers round out the top eight there for the NRL. All right, we move on to golf. The 2024 SA Varden Cup, I believe it is. Winners were Harry Cooty from the Royal Adelaide Golf Club with a par, even par of 72. And the women's was Matilda Miles from Cuyonga with a 1-under 73. So congratulations to them. Obviously, we're not going to be forgetting about the LIV Golf, which is coming up.
Yes.
We're obviously trying to secure somebody to talk to us about the LIV Golf and obviously Grange and everything else that goes on. All right, mate. And a couple of general questions just to finish off. I saved this one till last because I knew that that it was going to be a good talking point, was that Nord's bold bid to enter the AFL. One, is it viable? Is it the right time for Nord to leave the SANFL? Can SA have three teams?
My answer to all of that is no. I'm actually a bit disappointed. I would have liked Nord to come out and say, well, no, it's just not viable. It's, I don't like this speculation. I don't think it's helping anyone.
Yep.
It's certainly not helping the SANFL.
Yep.
Is
it a case of Nord holding fire from a strategic point of view?
I'm not sure. I just think the whole realism is that we struggle for enough business money. And let's remember, AFL, they're not footy clubs. They're multi-million-dollar corporation franchises.
They're a media entertainment company.
They're huge. there's not the business money in South Australia. Look, Port correctly, and I emphasise correctly, went to China because there wasn't the money here. There's nowhere near enough time for three. Also, supporter base-wise, let's remember, the Nord average age in the Greater Western Stand now is 72. Now, I'm sorry, you ain't getting those people back who've barracked for Adelaide for 30-plus years now. I just think it's pie-in-the-sky stuff, which isn't helping anyone. That's my own personal opinion. That's fine.
Is it a case of that if they do become the 20th team, is it a case of that it's more of a viewing on TV and online type sport where attendance and membership isn't necessarily the be-all and end-all?
It's not, because it's not the number one thing. The number one thing is broadcasting.
That's what I'm leading with.
I get that. I still think the 20th side, my mail is that the AFL don't want it to be a team which is going to be bleeding with money. I still think WA, the amount of money, which is available in WA, is far bigger than here. They're a far bigger state. Mm-hmm. The mining money that I think the side will either be based in Joondalup or Mandurah. That's my mail. And
that
I
seems to
be surprised.
Some pretty strong stuff coming out of there. The only thing is that Nord, obviously, with a rich tradition, is probably up there. And
I get
because
that.
They're on the national, they're on the national stage with the AFL W Crows and the gather round as well. Anyway, I thought I would leave that one to last and not poke the bear too early in the episode today.
I'm getting enough people having a crack at me. I just think people just aren't looking at. Go and have a look through AFL balance sheets. You know, you're not getting your sponsorship from the, you know, the pizza bar on the parade and the sports shop or Dylan's news bookshop or whatever. You're not getting millions of dollars from there. I just think it's a pie in the sky. That's how I feel.
Fair call. You're entitled to your opinion.
Yep.
Look, would it be nice to see them in the AFL?
Yeah.
Absolutely. We get it. But we've also got to be realistic about it. All right, the umpiring, you did touch on it a little bit earlier in the episode. The umpiring on Thursday night just didn't seem to be up to standard. And then we saw it again, obviously, with the Carlton Frio game as well. Is it a case of positioning?
That's a big part of it. The coaching for mine is totally wrong. That's how I've felt for a long time. This case of why. Who in the hell decided we better get the umpires out wide because we're worried about them colliding with a player? It happened once in a blue moon. Mm-hmm. You need to be in the middle so you can get side onto the contest. We're getting umpires in the wrong spot. We had it in the Nord Sturt game where an umpire just guessed a throw. Mm. Showed again plainly that Ling handballed. It was a shocking decision by Scott when you saw it again. For mine, it used to be if you guessed a throw and it turned out the player handballed, that was considered an error in law and you got dropped a week. That's no longer the case, which has got me a bit beat. Yeah, I just, there's a lot of things wrong. And look,
is that a worry that there's not enough coming from behind to warrant somebody being dropped for a week?
Oh, I just think it's now that's then they're ruling. And look, I was critical too of the number of sling tackles which were paid. Now, there was one free kick paid. Mm-hmm. And I immediately thought, that is a ridiculous free kick. Now, I've now seen it again because Mulligan actually got fined.
Yep.
I've now watched it again. I'll show it to you afterwards. Yes. I'm watching it again and I'm even more mystified. I'm going, when I saw it the first time, I was convinced that it wasn't a free kick. Mm-hmm. I'm totally convinced now and yet he got found guilty. So I can't have a crack at the umpire for it because that's the way what they're being told.
Crazy. Prior opportunity. We, if you look back at some of the game film from, you know, the 70s, 80s and 90s, a little bit from, you know, a lot of the games, there wasn't a lot of prior opportunity. Mm. Now I understand that they're obviously giving prior opportunity because they want to keep the ball moving. But if you're calling holding the ball relatively quickly with the prior opportunity, well, that player is going to move the ball on quickly because they don't want to turn over the ball for opposition.
I get that, but how many tackles are allowed where the player is at? You watch it in the back has virtually become a forgotten rule that it's paid once, you know, it's paid as often as Adam and Eve are sharing an apple nowadays, for goodness sake. It's still there. Pay over the shoulder.
Yes.
Pay in the back, and that'll keep the same thing. And you're then protecting the ball player more.
Yep.
You know, for mine, that's not rocket science.
Yep.
personally.
Yourself and Phil are obviously the umpire extraordinaires. I'm coming to you guys with the same questions that I'm sure a million people are, that you just don't quite understand why and how that's all come about. So anyway, all right, let's wind it up today, mate. We thank Jackson Callow for his little bit on the SANFL and also the state game representative, and congratulations to him on winning that. And obviously part one of Robbie Neal there in our past players, past legends segment. And it's not until you actually go through his stats, you know, he's been around some pretty good players, that's for sure.
Yeah, that, and also, as I told you before, even I said, right, you're going to get an extraordinary story about a training bit at Sydney, and he certainly delivered there. Yes. That is well and truly worth it. And Adelaide Uni Footy Club people will enjoy the whole Bob Neal bit as well.
Absolutely. As per usual, mate, we promise to do better. We'll see you all next week. Thanks, mate.
In this crazy world we live in, we all need the distraction. Enjoying the show? Like, rate, and subscribe. Hook up and connect with us on social media at SportsCastSA. We'll see you next time on Game On.